Our next presenter is Steve Lamp, and he hardly needs any introduction. It's not his first rodeo, but we don't have too many rodeos in Wisconsin. So in Wisconsin, we can say it's not your first load of pickles. Steve's calling card, he's got so many titles that he has to use two cards. He's a multimedia technology manager, product line manager for entertainment products. He's been with Belden 27 years. I thought it was more like 37.
Okay. Feels like it.
He's been an active radio broadcast engineer, film production, electronic distribution. He's a certified SBE radio communications engineer. He was named Educator of the Year in 2010 by the National Systems Contractors Association. That's data mainly. And was named Educator of the Year by the Society of Broadcast Engineers in 2010. He has numerous books, but I guess the biggest one is the Audio Video Cable Installer's Pocket Guide. How many books have you written?
Three.
Okay, there you go. It's all yours.
Okay.
And he'll humor us beside.
Yeah. Actually, since he started me talking about books, I'll tell you, I mentioned a few years ago that, I have lots and lots and lots of books I want to write. And the next one is going to be the first murder mystery about broadcasting. And it's called Dead Air. And I'm already a third of the way through this. So this is going to be a real book. I'm serious. And I'll tell you, part of the plot is about a third of the way through the book, the detective figures out that the wounds that the engineer had were low-voltage wounds, but he was in the high-voltage section of the transmitter. You follow this? And the plot takes off from then. And the culprit here is technology, which clearly is something that you're feeling right now. You know, the pinch, the squeeze, the ouch is about technology. And I'm not going to help you today. I'm going to make it worse, not better. You see, that? Yeah. One of my favorite jokes is the dictator who's told by somebody, you know, you need to go in that direction. And he says, no. My people are going in this direction. I have to follow them because I'm their leader. Okay, you get the joke. Well, that's the thing. You're looking at me and thinking, he's going to tell me which way to go. No, I'm not. I'm going to tell you we're just as lost as you are. But see, as a manufacturer, there's this amazing symbiosis between you and us. And the symbiosis is when you stop buying something, we stop making something. It's really clever. It works all that way. And the problem is that we're trying to guess where you're going, which is what you're trying to do too. You get the idea? And so a lot of times we guess wrong. Well, those are products that don't make it, and you've probably never heard of them. Back in 1900, if somebody said, hey, you should start making piston rings, you would have said, you're nuts. What's that for? I'm going to make saddles. You know, and that's a wrong decision. But we can look back, and it's funny to us now. Back then, it wouldn't have been so funny. So it's not that funny now, right? But you're trying to make these decisions. Okay. That's why I put this new frontier up here, 12 gig. It's a frontier. It's not the frontier. It's not the only frontier. And the whole point is, really, you have three choices in terms of what you're going to do when you're building a facility, when you're going to move your facility somewhere, or, you know, if you have to, if you're going to. You have three choices. These are the same three choices you've had for, 20 years, maybe more than that. In fact, actually, you've had it a lot longer than that. Fiber first came out. The first fiber we ever put plastic on was 1973. Where were you? Okay. That was a long time ago. And that's the latest one. And then after that, you have premise data cable, which, you know, Cat 5, Cat 6, Cat 6A, Cat 7 in Europe, Cat 8 is coming. I talked about that last year. It's still not here. You won't be happy when it does get here, but that's okay, because you're running on the fiber too, so maybe you're back to fiber. And of course, everybody thought coax is dead. Well, really, that's what I'm talking about today, is how undead this is. This is zombie stuff, you know? This is stuff that refuses to die. And partly it's because of you. This is your fault. And let me tell you why. No, I'm not kidding. Because there was a petition, and this was now 2.5, 3 years ago, a petition signed by the major networks, major domestic networks, and lots of major system integrators, and lots of bigwig VIPs, who signed a petition and sent it to Grass Valley, a company that we now own. And it said, please don't kill coax. Because, of course, the Grass Valley stuff is going to IP, like everybody else. They're making a very wise decision. They're going to IP. And so suddenly there's no BNCs on anything. And people are freaking out because that's all they know is BNCs. And so they want BNCs, and so they sent the petition. Now, the funny thing is Grass Valley thought we had put them up to it, you see. No, we didn't even know about it. We didn't hear about it until Grass Valley heard about it. And the point is, this is the problem here, is you want the old and the new. You're going to have some kind of hybrid thing going. I'm not going to help you there because I don't know. I'm just going to offer you three things, and guess what? I'm going to offer you the same three things. And the problem is, if you say, but we want something even better than this, oh, there are things better than this, and maybe next year I'll come back and talk about them. I'll tell you three of them, some of which I've mentioned in the past. Carbon nanotubes. Can't buy any. Doesn't exist. No products. No part numbers. Don't bother to try and find them. But the director of engineering said to me, not ready for prime time. Those are interesting words to me. That means, obviously, we're looking at carbon nanotubes. Maybe we've even played with them, but they're not going to tell me, of course, because then I'd tell you, right? And that's the problem. I'm just a loose cannon. So they're not going to tell me anything that they don't want you to know. Carbon nanotubes. After that, room temperature superconductors. Oh, boy, that would change the world as we know it. And they've been working on this for 50 years, so this is not new stuff. And the third thing, and you can Google any of these, by the way, if you guys don't believe me, the third thing is quantum entanglement. Go look that up. It will blow your mind. And this is something Einstein knew about, and he died in 1952, okay? So it's been around for a long, long time. Just nobody understands it, that's all. So there are three technologies that would change the world if you actually were the guy who figured out how to do any of those three. First of all, you'd be the first trillionaire in the world, and then you would collect the Nobel Prize along the way, which wouldn't be too bad. That would be a pretty good thing. So please, I would love to say, you know, I was in Madison, Wisconsin, and he was, or she, was in the audience. And now look at that person. I knew that person. That person knows my name. Whoa. Oh, would you please do that. And then these things will be swept into the museum of yesterday, you see. Until then, of course, this is your choice. Now, the first thing, fiber optic cable, where you take electrons, you convert them to photons, and you can run them down to pieces of glass. You know what this is like. And most of this is single mode. There is multi-mode as well. The cost difference between them is essentially zero now. They're almost the same. And the cost of a fiber optic cable is pretty darn low. It's about a par with anything else I'm going to tell about. Whether it's coax or twisted pairs or anything else, they're all exactly the same price. That has nothing to do with it. The difference, and has always been the difference, is the fact that fiber requires you to convert from electrons to photons in order to get it to work, and convert at the other end back. So if you're doing point-to-point wiring, it's the most expensive way you could possibly do it. So within a bunch of racks, electrons are a lot cheaper than photons. However, here's your next $1 billion idea. Figure out how to make a chip that works on photons, a photonic amplifier, a photonic splitter. That would change the world. That would make you a trillionaire and a Nobel Prize as well. But they don't exist, at least not yet. Are people working on them? Oh, sure. I bet dozens of labs. And that's the whole point. I can't tell you which one of these is going to hit first, you know? And the point is, if you know, don't tell me. See your stockbroker. That's what you're supposed to do. That's how you get rich, is making good guesses. That's all Warren Buffett ever does, is make good guesses. He's just made a lot of them, right? He does his homework. That's it. He's not some super genius. He just does his homework. It's work. Okay, fiber. So the whole point is, if we got there at the very end, fiber amplifier splitters optical circuitry, then fiber would be obviously the way to go, because then there's no conversion. Then you would plug from point A to point B. And in fact, in some Star Trek episodes of various Star Trek series, they show giant optical connections between things, which I think are cool because they're still really not here, not that way, where everything is optical. And that clearly is correct. It just happens to be TV, you know, it's not real. But it could be. Twisted pairs, your second option. And at least in the U.S., as far as you can go in the U.S., is Cat 6A, Category 6A, which is 10 gig cable. And there's a little disconnect here because a 10 gig cable cannot handle 12 gig video. You get the idea? It's just not quite the right number, you know? And so what our friends at Grass Valley did about this is they use something called T-code compression, where they take three channels of video, and they compress them down from 12 gig down to 3 gig, a number that you have been familiar with. They can put three of those on 10 gig with 1 gig left over for metadata or SNMP or whatever you want, right? That's a lot, a gig. You could do a lot on a gig. And you could put that on one data cable. Wow, except, you see, I used this bad word, this terrible word, this four-letter word, compression, right? And people hate that word, especially if they're in Hollywood or somewhere where they want the original quality, uncompressed, you know, perfect as perfect can be, then compression is a bad word. In which case, maybe not so good. Although, these pictures look pretty darn good. But see, I'm looking as a consumer, not as a program originator. So this is a decision, of course. Okay, so the next step after Category 6A, which is what this is Category 8, which will come in two flavors, 25 gig and 40 gig. Those are more than enough to carry 12 gig uncompressed, two into 25, two 12s into 25, three 12s into 40 with a bunch left over. And so the whole point is, then it'd be fine, except Category 8 looks like it's going to be 100 feet, 30 meters distance. Not 100 meters, which was 328 feet. That's where we are now. That's a nice distance. Can you do everything in 30 meters? Well, this assumes that you are a data installation. Yeah, you have, you know, a server farm somewhere of your very own. I don't mean the cloud. I mean, you know, the building you live in. Is 30 meters enough? They say it's enough to do 90% of those installations. And the 10% are left? You could do that on fiber if they're too far. Fiber will go a lot farther. Okay, so you could. That's the whole point. You could do anything. The question is this what you want to do? Well, for some people, this is the way to go. And I'll tell you, if you know about networking, see, and when I first started to talk at the Broadcasters Clinic, it was like 99% broadcast coax guys, at least on the TV side at least, and 1% people who knew anything about networking. Now it's the other way around, right? You are networking guys that know a little bit about coax. And Zoe, you know something about networking, which is it's made to do ads, moves, and changes. It's the way of the world. It's definitely the way of the future. It's the way everybody's going, is networking. And what does that mean? Well, that means if your general manager said, we need to move master control to the other end of the building. Oh my God, that's a 6-month project right now that takes 1 million feet of cable, because you throw the old cable away, right? Thank you very much. Thank you. But with the data cable, all you do is go change a couple of things in the patch panel, and bingo, the other end of the building is where master control will be, and you put up a screen or two, and you have, you know, multi-viewer screens, and away you go. And virtual controls, I mean, you've seen that all this week here. Nothing's going to actually be real, just you get it to work anyway. And so the point is, this is the way the world is going. So maybe that's the way you go too. It's certainly going to get to a point where it's going to be so cheap you can't say no. But in the meanwhile, of course, there's this third way, the old way, the way everybody loves. Oh, I'm sorry, category 6A, this is the cable for that previous one, 100 ohms, 10 gig bandwidth, 10 gigabits, 10G base T. And we make different kinds of cables. I showed you this last year. This on the left is this new 10G XS, S for small. Excuse me, it's 25% smaller than regular 10 gig, outperforms it. And the secret in this is there's an absorptive layer inside, so it's not actually a shielded cable. It just has all the advantages of a shielded cable, but there's no drain wire, there's no connection. There's no way to make a connection because that absorptive layer in there is covered in plastic on both sides. You couldn't make a connection to it if you wanted to. And what it does is absorb the energy that's trying to leave the cable or get into the cable, or transfer between cables, which is really what the problem is here with big bundles of cable like that, is alien crosstalk from cable to cable. This stops that. And yet you put on an unshielded connector on the ends of that cable on the left there, because it's not a shield. There's no drain wire. And therefore, you can't get a ground loop or any ground-induced noise or all sorts of other problems that are ground-induced, not the least of which is people take shielded cables and they cut one end of them to prevent ground loops. I could show you a slide that would curl your hair, if you have any left. And that, it shows you, it looks like a comb filter. That's how good the shield is at that point. So the whole point is, sometimes I can cure problems by giving you unshielded cable, which sounds crazy, especially these days. You know, we're up in the gigahertz. You gotta have shields in the gigahertz. No, you don't. You gotta have cable that works. That's what you want. And we have these new connectors, which we've now sold millions and millions of, by the way. Something called RevConnect. And all it is a little white module you stick on the back of your cable, the end of your cable. It's so easy. Your kids could do this. Well, your kids are doing everything already, right? So, makes sense. Very simple to put on. And the highest quality of connection we have ever seen in an RJ45. And the reason is really quite simple. In fact, you know, technology is simple once you understand it. And the simple part here is the fact that when you fold the four pairs into this little plastic thing, and it has color codes on it to tell you which pair to put into which slot, you never have to split the pairs. Splitting the pairs is where all the bad stuff happened with the previous connectors you used. And when you split pairs, even just a slight amount, that's 5 or 6 dB of crosstalk. That's impedance variations that you didn't need that cause reflections on the cable, return loss. All sorts of bad stuff because you split the pairs. In this case, the pairs are never split. They're never separated. And yet, they make a perfectly good connection. Now, it's too late. The guys with all this demo are in the hall next door, and they're gone now. So, sorry about that. You missed it, but they could have given you a demo. Maybe some of you did see a demo. And we make shielded, we make unshielded, depending on which kind of cable you use. You can use shielded cable. We make Cat 5e, Cat 6, Cat 6a. We don't make 8 yet because I haven't seen any 8 cable. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what the connector is going to look like. When we do, we'll probably add this to the line. There's a crimp tool in the middle. Cheap crimp tool. We don't want to sell crimp tools. We want to sell connectors, right? So it's a very inexpensive tool. And there's another thing that's happening in the video world, which is they're going to this thing, an SFP, which is a media converter. And you plug something in one end, and you get the same thing at the other end, so to speak. And so you have all these SFP slots in your equipment. And you can take the one on the left and plug in a 10-gig data cable of copper, like the stuff I just showed you previously, plug that in there, and plug it into your equipment. And if you change your mind, you want to go farther than that cable, than the 100 meters that cable will let you go, you can unplug that, plug in the one on the right, which is 2 fibers. And suddenly you're in the fiber optic world. And at the very end, I'll show you a third module, which has only recently come out, from Embryonics. It's not even from Belden. These are Belden modules here, but there's a third one from someone else where they have coax inputs. Oh, yeah, no, they're not going to make it easy for you to decide. You're going to have the same 3 choices. It's just on the equipment itself, it's going to be SFP ports, and you can change your mind and plug in whatever you need to plug in and move it around and make life simple. But really what I'm going to talk about, of course, is this ancient old stuff called coax, which we, well, let's see. Modern coax started in 1929, invented by 2 guys, Lloyd Espenscheid and Herman Affle. You've never heard of them, though I might have mentioned them a few times here before. I succeeded in getting Lloyd Espenscheid an Academy Award for the invention of modern coax. That wasn't my intent, but that's what happened. So, and he's been dead for 20 years, so I don't know what good it did, but okay. An Emmy. And the point is, well, this is only the modern version of that same stuff. And of course, you're looking at that and says, looks like a coax to me. It has a center conductor, it has some plastic around it, it has a shield or a couple of shields or something, and then a jacket, and it's like a, what's the difference? Well, that's the thing. You can't see the difference. And that's the problem with technology, too. You can't see the difference. It all looks the same. And you know, this is perfectly true, that by the time you're done sending your stuff to your viewers, they're going to say it's exactly the same as when grandma was watching, only it looks better. Or the sound is better. Or, you know, there's, I don't know what this deep color is, but it looks better. You know, that it's like, for them, almost nothing has changed. For you, the world has changed. They just can't see it happen, that's all. So in this particular instance, the center conductor, by the way, this is a color photograph. I wish I had a colored jacket, like green or purple or something, because it doesn't look like a colored picture except for that blue foil there. But it is a color picture. And the whole point is, that center conductor, if you look at the end of it, if you can see just the very end of that center conductor, you can see it's copper-colored, but the outside is not. Why? Because we did the one thing we can do to improve really high frequency performance. Well, we're talking 12 gigahertz here. That's pretty high frequency. As I was saying at lunch yesterday with some guys here, I remember when microwaves were 950 megahertz, you know? Now I'm putting 12 gigahertz on a coax. Crazy world! Well, that is a silver-coated copper center conductor. And that means when you talk about skin effect at really high frequencies, the skin it's on is silver, the lowest resistance of any metal we can use. Until we get to carbon nanotubes, you see? Don't get me started, okay? Right now, this is it. Silver-coated copper. Over that is foamed polyethylene. Well, that's what we've been using that for 40 years now. And we've gotten better and better at doing it. Yes, but this is the polyethylene that we're foaming here is a different polyethylene. It's a new low-loss polyethylene. In fact, I get in trouble talking about this. This is all I know about it because the engineers have told me this is the first time this particular polyethylene has ever been used in coax. And so we're foaming something new. It ends up looking pretty much the same as it did before, only the performance is much more stable, much more consistent, better. Can you see that? No. Then over that is a foil shield, a braid shield, and a foil shield in this particular instance. A foil braid foil, we call that a tri-shield. And the interesting thing is the cables you normally had in the old days were just a foil and a braid. That does about 90 dB of isolation. And that's something you need for coax because there's no balance line twisted pair here to get rid of noise. So you're dependent entirely on the shield. 90 dB, that's pretty good. And especially when that goes out to 12 gigahertz, 90 dB. But by adding a third unit, a second foil, foil braid foil, I can get it to 120 dB of isolation, which is as high as we can go. Although I'll tell you this, that the people at the factory hate that second shield. It is a bitch to put into the cable. And so they would prefer not to. And so we only do this with two cables, the two cables that go the longest. And we'll talk about what those are in just a second. So if you're going a long way, I give you a second shield, a second foil with the braid. And so you have this tri-shield and really good shield effectiveness. And we assume if it's a long way, it could be like outdoors. It could be direct buried. It could be, you know, in a transmitter site. It could be somewhere. There's a lot of RF. You know, you get the idea. If it's a little tiny cable, you're not going to go a long way with that. It can't go a long way. That's just going to be braid and foil like it's always been. However, it's really not like it's always been because one of the things we've done, that foil, that very first foil, is now glued to the core. And this is something when we first started to make digital video cable in 1993. And I was a young sales guy in San Francisco, California, and we sold a lot of this cable, 1505A. Does that sound familiar? Our first digital cable. We sold a pile of it, and it had foil bonded to the core. And this is something that's very common when you do F connectors in cable TV world, you know, because they have to slide on. Well, a BNC is a different thing. And the network engineer said, no, no bonded foil, because if you don't strip it perfectly, you end up with a little slice of core with a little piece of foil on it, and you short out the insides of the connector, and bingo, the thing doesn't work. No bonded foil. So we stopped bonding the foil. But now, we're at 12 gigahertz. And at 12 gigahertz, the distance between the center conductor and that first foil is what sets up the impedance of the cable. It's that distance. Well, I need accuracy there. And the only way I can get to the accuracy I need is to glue that foil once again, which means you're going to have to get better at putting on connectors. Oh, duh, it was 12 gigahertz. You knew this was coming. So the whole point is, that's bonded. Then we get to the braid, and I'll tell you what. We spent more time of the 2.5 years we spent developing these cables working on the braid than anything else at all. And the reason was very simple. We looked at our existing cables, 1694, 1505, all these cables you've loved for a long time, and they're great to 1.5 gig, and they're great to 3 gig, and 4.5 gig, and they were even pretty good out to 6 gig, which is the first step on the way to 12 gig, you know, that's poor man's 4K. And there are a lot of people out there still doing 6 gig. Well, our existing cables will now do 6 gig. But we started looking beyond that. And what do we see? Oh, all these funny spikes in response. And what are those funny spikes? They're the braid in the cable, the only thing left that really has some physicality to it. I'm inventing a new word here. And the whole point is that, you know, there are four sets of wires, and they fold over each other, and there's an angle they cross each other over called the braid angle, and you control all these things, and the tension on the four wires, I mean, it's like crazy. So how do we get rid of these spikes? Well, we can get rid of them and move them to some higher frequencies, but the problem is what happens when we start doing 8K? Those are going to come back again with a vengeance. We can't just keep sweeping them under the rug. You know, you ran out of rug eventually. So we have to get rid of them, really. And what we did was look at all our thousands of braiding machines. It's the one machine we have more of in the factories than any other machine in the manufacturing of wire and cable. Excuse me. So the whole point is we tested all the machines. We sequestered the ones that did the best job at getting rid of these spikes. And then we worked on them. And in fact, if you go into our factories now, and by the way, you're welcome to take a tour of any of our 37 factories. You have 37 factories around the world. The largest is in Richmond, Indiana, which ain't that far and away from you right now. And we'd be glad to give you a tour and say, take me to the braiding section. They say, sure enough, and here's 1,000 braiders. And you look at them, and some of them say 6 gigahertz on them. Some of them say 12 gigahertz on them. Aha! You get the idea. You see, we figured out which ones are the really good ones, and we've worked on those, and those are the ones braiding these particular cables. So, and the interesting thing about braiding, the machines, that the Warall machines that make these braids, they were originally intended to make shoelaces. They're shoelaces. That's what we're doing, metal shoelaces on cables, okay, just so you know. You buy a shoelace machine, it's the same machine. So, the second foil. That second foil is glued to the jacket. So that when you strip the jacket off, you take that second foil. You don't even know it's there. And you see a braid and a foil, just like you've always seen. You don't realize that this cable you're holding is 120 dB isolation cable because it has that second foil. That's okay. That's all right. Now you know. And the whole point is, we also make the connectors, which I'll talk about briefly at the end here. Okay. There's kind of a quick sum of this. If they're going to put this on the website, you can take a look and it'll remind you what I just said. Okay. Here are some of the 4K cables we're making. Now, I was very clever. This is my product line. So I took the part number you already know. I took off the first number and put a 4. That's the 4K version. So 1855, which you might know, is called 4855. That's the 4K version of that cable. A mini one. 4855P plenum is coming soon. In fact, I think it is coming next week soon. That's pretty soon. So we're going to do NAB New York next week. Be introduced. Now, this is a mini 59. We do make a cable smaller than this called 179DT. You've probably never heard of it. We haven't sold a whole lot of it. I mean, we've done a few things because people said this cable was too big. It's tiny, 159 OD, tiny. Well, we're going to make a smaller cable than this as well, about a 4K version. I know what the part number is, but I'm not going to tell you because you're going to try and order it. And it doesn't exist yet. Maybe by Christmas, I'm hoping, certainly first quarter of next year for sure, you'll have essentially the full range of sizes in 4K. But for now, this is the smallest. This is, by the way, the second most popular size that we sell. Come on. I'm pushing the... Oh, that was it. Okay, here's a piece of 4855 cable tested. And what this is showing you is return loss. 30 dB return loss. You look at the return loss over on the left-hand side. 30 dB... is 99.9% of the signal gets through and 0.1% is reflected. And you'll notice this cable is almost entirely, I think it is entirely 30 dB or better. If we could get to 40 dB, that would be 99.99% gets through and 0.01% reflected. Well, we're not there yet. We're there occasionally. I could point to like 5 or 10 places in that line that it gets down to 40, but only, you know, specific frequencies. But 30 is darn good. The red line is our guarantee. This cable and every cable we make for 12 gig 4K will be no worse than that red line. And above it is the SMPTE limit line, which is part of the standards formula. And that's for not just cable, but connectors and patch cords and patch panels and bulkheads and feed-throughs and adapters and on and on and on. Everything that's 12 gig better be 75 ohms out to 12 gig is what that's saying. And so that is a very easy standard to hit, that blue line up top. And you'll notice we are miles away from that line. Well, we like to be. If somebody says, I have a cable that meets the SMPTE standard, that's like saying, hey, I have a car that'll do 55 on the freeway. Well, it's better, since that's what the sign says, you know? That's going to be the slowest car on the road, for sure. Next size up, 1505, remember that? Now it's 4505. 4505R for riser rated, by the way. 6 millimeters, just under 1/4 inch. You know, medium distance. I mean, you probably know this stuff. You know what it's for. It's just the 12 gig 4K version of that cable. And here's what it looks like. Hello. Better. Better than the 1855, as you can see. You know, we're getting darn close to 40. It's funny, because I remember being in this very, well, not this very room, but the previous room for the clinic, and saying, if you could make cable that did minus 40, we would stop making cable and buy all our coax from you, because that would be the world's best coax. We're getting there. And here I'm going out to 12 gigahertz, and I'm consistently hitting 40. That's unbelievable. Because back then I was talking about, you know, 3 gig, maybe less, 2 gig. 4694, the 4K version of 1694. You know, our most popular size. The reason we didn't start with this one is because the people in Korea wanted to go 100 meters, and this wouldn't. This will do about 70 meters at 12 gig. The next one will do 100 meters, or really close to it. And you can see this is just over 1/4 inch. And there we are. Also pretty good. Also better than 30, as you can see. Consistently 40, but not all the time. This is the one we started with, a cable you might not have ever heard of. 1794A. This is the 4K version of that 4794R. 98 meters at 4K. We're being very honest. You know, they wanted 100. This will do 98. So, you know, yeah, it'll do 100 and be slightly worse than perfect. And this isn't as good as the previous two cables. Well, this was the first one out of the barn. That's why. And that's the thing. As we go along, we're going to be working on these. Yeah, with the previous cables, we improved them over and over again until they were as good as we can get them. And then suddenly we start over again, you know? Probably going to do that with 8K as well. But nobody's told us anything about that yet. RG11, the largest size we make. This one just came out. The plenum version is coming soon. This is the other cable that will have that tri-shield in it. And it makes sense, because this is, you know, RG11, this is a long-run cable. This is not something I would use casually. This is the garden hose of digital video, you know. So you better have a good reason to buy it. It's big. And the thing is, the plenum version, that's a whole lot of Teflon in there, and that goes, all that money goes to DuPont. It doesn't go to us. So, and if you want to know how far it goes, if you get a copy of these slides, that address at the bottom will take you to the chart of distances. And I will show you a very short version of the chart of distances. It's not even complete because I'm trying to get it into one slide. Whoops, now it's working. Okay. Oh, it should be up a little bit, but that's okay. And this shows you the distances for all these cables, including all the new 4Ks. The new 4Ks are in this list here at SD, HD, 3G. 3G in the new standard ST425, which has a new formula for distance at the very top. That's the distance formula we use. That's part of the standard. If people say our cables will go a whole lot farther, the question is, what standard did you test them to? You just put them out and just send you got a signal out the end? Well, that's not a test. That's called a hope, you know. That's different. This is actually done with a formula, which says when the signal is down 40 dB at half the clock, the Nyquist limit, that's as far as you can go. And that's how we generate these numbers. So we can generate these numbers before we even build the cable, because we know exactly what it's going to be like. And the point is, you notice out in the 12 gig, I only have 1, 2, 3, 4 cables at the moment. When we have our plenum ones, there'll be a few more. When I make direct burial ones, when I make, flexible ones, I'm not sure we can, but my engineers keep saying, oh, yeah. The question is, how far can we go? You know, flexible and distance don't go together. So there are lots of empty spaces, is what I'm saying. And slowly we'll be filling up those empty spaces in that last row. But at least you have some choices here if you need to. Dimensions and tolerances. The only reason I put this here, well, first of all, I've never put it in a presentation before. And I'm not supposed to put this kind of stuff in a presentation before. This talks about how accurately we can make something like a piece of coax. Melting plastic around pieces of metal, and you can get precision. Yeah, look at the precision. Look at the tolerance on the conductor. Plus or minus tolerance. And the reason I'm showing this, there are two reasons, really. Number one, to depress my competitors, for sure. And number two, because the connector people have to see these numbers. See, they do the same thing. They have a dimension and they have a tolerance. And if the dimensions might be exactly the same as ours, but if their tolerances are different, connectors won't fit cable, or they'll fall off, or you won't be able to push them on. And you say, what the hell is going on, right? Wrong tolerance. So I'm showing them the tolerances here so they can match tolerances as well. And this shows you the reaction from the silver-coated copper center conductor and the super duper polyethylene, the foamed polyethylene. Down at low frequencies, like 1 gigahertz, this is down at 1 gigahertz at the end, it has no effect at all. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. By the time you're at 12 gigahertz at the end of the chart, it's 8 dB difference. I give you 8 dB more signal because of those two factors at the end of the cable. I have invented a cable that amplifies signals. A passive amplifier. Now, if that's not a Nobel Prize, I don't know what is. Lest you think you're not getting anything for your money, I gave you 8 dB for that money. And we make connectors. In fact, I have this is a list I just put in recently of the one-piece and three-piece connectors. One-piece compression, three-piece crimp. With the compression tool and the strip tool and stuff. So if you get a copy of these slides, at least you'll know what they are. And these are 12 gig BNC connectors. We actually looked at our existing connectors. These, by the way, these cables are exactly the same dimensions as their predecessors. So you can use your old connectors still. Just don't automatically expect them to be 12 gig connectors. But you'd be surprised how some connectors out there, including ours, worked really well out to 12. We just could make something better. Now we have something better, which is why I'm putting those up there. That's better still. You know, there's nothing that can't be improved. Here's that SFP with coax on it, okay? So this hasn't solved anything for you, except make it easy to plug things in and out and, move it around. And those are Amphenol mini connectors there. Those aren't our connectors or anything. And just a regular BNC on the other. Current colors? Black, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet. Which leaves out three colors from the color code that we don't currently have, which are brown, gray, and white. So the first huge order we get, what did we get? White, of course, right? Well, that's okay, because if you order more than 5,000 feet or something, we'll color match. We'll color match your wife's nail polish. Yeah. There was one guy who wanted his Corvette matched. Oh, there was one time. This is a long time ago, when Mattel Toys was building their data center. This is a long time ago now. And they wanted it all in Barbie pink. That is 1583B. We still make this cable. You can still order it in Barbie pink. Okay? But it's a data cable. It's not a coax. Yeah, same plastic, just a different color chip.
How many Barbies did you have to melt?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that was a terrible thing. Other applications, stranded, flexible, outdoor, direct burial, fire ratings, European fire ratings, you know, I mean, these are all eventually going to come out. And look at that. Oh, it says zero. How perfect. I thank you much. Questions? You believed it all.
Or none of it.
Or not. Yeah. Thank you.
So how far are you away from the theoretical limits of copper?
We still have ways to go. I'm pretty sure we can do 8K. The question is, can we do it with enough distance to make it reasonable as an option? You know, if I can go 10 feet, that probably won't work. Another?
Forgive the dumb radio guy question, but
no.
I see you've got, for these coaxes, you've got a compression connector and you've got a three-piece crimp connector. Can you help me understand why I'd prefer one over the other?
Because that's what people have gotten used to.
So like the same old compression tools they already have would work? Or do they need new tools?
No.
Need they're new tools too.
But some people love the three-piece, and it has to do with the ability to control every little part and motion that you're doing so you know exactly what you've done, where with the compression, it's all one connector. So therefore, we've kind of pre-decided things for you, and you're kind of trusting us a little more than you might want to. But I'll give you an example. When you compress this one piece onto 1694, it has 110 pounds of pull strength. You're never going to pull that off. If you could physically pull it off, you've already ruined the cable because it only has 69 pounds of pull strength on the cable. So you went twice as much. So what I'm saying is we have a new idea, but people are scared of the new idea. So we give them the old ones as well. Western saddle, English saddle. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, could you please click back through a few slides ago? You had a page where you had a web address, http://info.belden.com.
Yeah, this is where one?
There it is. Okay, that's what I needed to know. All right.
Since we're talking about BNCs, aside from that pull strength, is, say, a perfectly attached three-piece BNC, is there any performance difference to a compression single-piece connector?
No. Perfection is perfection, right? If you can put them on both perfectly, they're pretty much, I can't imagine they would be any different. By the time you get to perfection, it all goes down to zero. But that's the whole point, is you have to be, and some people think they can put on a three-piece a lot better than they could put on a one-piece. That's fine. It'll take you a little longer. So therefore, if you have a staff, you're doing, a giant building with a million connectors, I can save you a lot of time, and time then is money. So then it's a question of trust versus money kind of thing. And I'd be glad to send you some samples for you to try, and you tell me whether it works or not, or is dependable, and, if you're unconvinced, I have good friends who will only use three-piece connectors. That's fine. It's their choice.
So follow-up. Years ago, when I was working at a different station, we had some installer come from Charter to do something and tried to convince me that the crimp, the physical crimp that you do on the end of a three-piece BNC, somehow degrades the performance of the cable. Was he speaking out of turn. Is there any truth to that, as far as you know?
You want a theoretical answer or an actual answer?
Well, your opinion.
In my opinion, it could affect it. I mean, certainly if your crimp tool is not the right crimp tool, you could have one with dimensions on it that would compress the cable so that it's no longer at 75 ohms right for that little area. That's quite possible. But if you have the crimp tool that's called out and the connector that's intended for the crimp tool and the cable, you know, I can't imagine how you could ever crimp it to anything worse than what it already does. It stops, you know, it's a ratchet. It can't go farther than X.
Thank you.
Plus those crimp tools, this is your charter, was this cable TV time? Yeah, so he's using something that is probably unratcheted and probably just kind of a generic kind of size. But it's cable TV world, so they don't care. That cable is 2 cents a foot, you know? Thank you.